Welcome to today's MediNews podcast. Today we take great pleasure in welcoming Martin Dulcer to the programme. Welcome, Martin. I'm Desmond Fernandes, a former senior lecturer in human geography at De Montfort University in the UK. I focused on documenting aspects relating to the criminalisation of the Kurdish diaspora in the UK and Germany, amongst other concerns relating to the criminalisation and targeting of communities worldwide. The focus of today's podcast is really the nature of the criminalisation of the Kurdish diaspora in Germany, the criminalisation of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, in the country, as well as the criminalisation or repression of initiatives by peace campaigners, human rights defenders, concerned members of the public, political activists, organisations and peace initiatives that seek to criticise the Turkish state's repressive policies and the German state's special relationship with Turkey. This is even after the German police revealed this July that they were aware of the existence of a Turkish hit list of 55 critics of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey. And again, this is even after this July, the repression of the opposition in Turkey was condemned by the European Parliament, amongst many other human rights bodies, and a resolution condemning the repression of opposition political parties in Turkey, particularly the People's Democratic Party, the HDP, was adopted in the European Parliament. Members of the European Parliament, MEPs, strongly condemned the indictment refiled by Turkey's chief public prosecutor at the Constitutional Court seeking the dissolution of the HDP, the third largest political party in the Turkish Parliament, and a political ban on nearly 500 of its party members. Allowing the HDP to participate unhindered in Turkey's democratic institutions is one simple way to make Turkish society more inclusive and generate positive momentum towards a peaceful settlement of the Kurdish issue, MEPs stated. They also condemned the decision of the Turkish authorities to remove democratically elected mayors from office on the basis of questionable evidence and replace them with unelected trustees. Now, as this podcast explores today, since the 1980s, it has become increasingly apparent that Kurdish asylum seekers from Turkey and Kurdish refugee and diasporic communities in Germany have been targeted and criminalised in a number of disturbing ways by state and non-state actors. We're really pleased to have Martin Dulcer today speaking about these issues and concerns. Martin is based in Germany, the author of The Turkish-Kurdish Conflict, Human Rights, Peace, Democracy in a European Country, where again he quite relevantly adds a question mark at the end of that title. He's also a member of the Defend Kurdistan Initiative and was a German parliamentarian. He has been closely following and has been an activist involved in refugee rights and wider human rights concerns for almost three decades in Germany. Martin is also a journalist and has written for Junge Welt and Neues Deutschland. In October 2018, he initiated, alongside MEP Cornelia Ernst and the Lampedusa Group, the European Parliament in Brussels' first Refugee and Migrants Parliament. Participants in the conference passed a resolution calling for a halt to enforced refugee deportations, compliance with the United Nations Refugee Convention, and an end to the attacks on the dignity of refugees through isolation and an inhumane detention system. Firstly, now, just before Martin explores these issues in depth, I just wanted to provide some detailed context to the situation in Germany. It's firstly important to note that the Kurdish diaspora has been subjected to several types of criminalisation-linked targeting actions for decades since the 1980s in Germany. As a consequence of state and European Union superstate Fortress Europe policies and guidelines, and decades-long arms trading and counterinsurgency and psychological warfare assistance provided by the German government to Turkey's armed forces in its struggle against the PKK, which remains proscribed in Germany as opposed to Belgium, for example, where it has been decriminalised, and as a consequence of historic NATO relations with member states Turkey and the US, as well as NATO-US-Turkey publicly accountable links with covert depolitical and paramilitary Gladio structures, prison, immigration, security and policing initiatives in Germany have targeted and criminalised large sections of the Kurdish diaspora, as well as people supporting Kurdish struggles for liberation from oppressive Turkish state practices. Several lawyers, human rights defenders, human rights groups and investigative journalists and Kurdish organisations have described these German state-linked initiatives as institutionally racist and publicly unaccountable on a number of levels. The significant role of much of the tabloid press, political parties, far-right groups, corrupt police, unaccountable security services and Turkish security services in further targeting and or criminalising Kurdish asylum seekers and refugees and the Kurdish diaspora in Germany must also not be overlooked. There have been politically questionable trials, arrests, closures of cultural and news centres, prison terms and deportation of Kurds back to Turkey ever since the 1980s. The Defend the Kurds campaign disturbingly noted as early as the mid-90s, for instance, that Kurds in Germany continue to be questionably targeted and criminalised using Article 129A of the Penal Code. I know Martin will be talking about Article 129B shortly. The Defend the Kurds campaign noted that use of that article, that's Article 129A, in the Penal Code makes the establishment of terrorist organisations a punishable offence without clearly defining what actually is to be understood by the term terrorist. The provision is thus open to manifold interpretations of terrorism according to the convenience of the state security forces and demands of politics. Thus, it is possible to be arrested for simply leafleting. The Defend the Kurds campaign additionally concluded that for all Kurdish refugees and asylum seekers who ended up being targeted and criminalised in this way in Germany, pre-trial detention has no limit and can extend for years. By 1995, indeed, the Defend the Kurds campaign had ascertained that an estimated 400 Kurds were being detained in German prisons, many under Article 129A, in exceptional and inhumane conditions of solitary confinement that amounted to a form of torture because of its grave consequences for their health. It noted that the Kurdish language is effectively banned during visits, as it is throughout Turkey and North Kurdistan. Pro-Kurdish press editions are forbidden to Kurdish prisoners in German jails. Following the PKK ban, an almost boundless criminalisation of Kurdish refugees has been taking place. The Defend the Kurds campaign continued. Operations against them have become increasingly repressive and brutal and have involved completely disproportionate and spectacularly large-scale operations by the police and special forces using checks, searches, a systematic rejection of applications for asylum and expulsions aimed at specific persons, surveillance and preliminary proceedings for violations of the Association Act. Homes are routinely raided and offices emptied, the Defend the Kurds campaign continued. It stated, and I quote again here, demonstrations are attacked by armed security forces and numerous people are rounded up and arrested. Cultural festivals and New Year Nevros celebrations are banned and freedom of movement over borders severely restricted or even prevented. Even simple manifestations of Kurdish culture and ideology are now banned. Even the use of logos, emblems and flags are prohibited. Books, videotape TV coverage, publications, posters, photographs and paintings of Kurdish martyrs and leaders, sashes and scarves in the Kurdish colours, all are liable for confiscation. End quote. Young Kurdish refugees caught flyposting ERNK and PKK posters were also targeted by police in brutal and sometimes tragic ways. The German lawyer Hans Eberhard Schultz in 1996 described the way that, and I quote, Kurdish associations have been banned or closed down. Among these, the Kurdistan Information Centre, which was deemed a substitute for the Kurdistan Committee, every single local Kurdish association in Bavaria, despite the fact that they had already been banned by the Federal Minister of the Interior in 1993 and had won the appeal against this action, and even the Kurdish news agency and Kurdish publishers were banned. He continued, all Kurdish associations are placed under blanket surveillance and control. Police raids and house searches, confiscations occur almost daily. End quote. Now, it's rather depressing and rather chilling to note that 2.5 decades on from this alarming political environment, even as repression of the Kurds has continued in Turkey and the Turkish state's actions and cross-border military operations in Iraqi Kurdistan and in North Syria have been condemned by a number of human rights organisations and human rights defenders, we see that the German state is still heavily involved in criminalising actions against even human rights defenders and peace campaigners, not even necessarily Kurds from Germany, who even sought to travel to Iraqi Kurdistan to document the destructive impacts and consequences of the Turkish armed forces' recent cross-border military operations. To highlight some of these most recent developments in Germany, which suggests that little has changed indeed in many respects since the 1980s, I just wish, by way of a few key examples, to highlight the following before Martin takes over. Miral Žižek, writing in Ozgur Politica, and also as translated into English by Medinews, noted the following just last month, and I quote, "The ban on the PKK in Germany, the first Western state to ban the organisation in 1993, has been used as a resourceful instrument of criminalisation for almost 30 years. This ban has not only denied the universal rights of organisation, political expression and the right of resisting the oppression of the Kurds, but it has also created the grounds upon which special warfare methods have been utilised to manufacture a social perception that favours the German state's hostile policy. It is stated, actually known for some time now, that Germany has been assigned in NATO with the objective of keeping Kurdish dynamics under control. The aggression of the German state against Defend Kurdistan Initiative campaigners, the recent house arrests and the ban on the assembly of the European Kurdish Democratic Society's Congress, that's the KCDKE, must all be read in the same context. It has become clearer," she noted, "that after the recent NATO meeting, the West, especially the US and Germany, has once again shown its intent to keep the fascist regime of the Justice and Development Party and the Nationalist Movement Party, that's the AKP-MHP alliance, in power. The German state is a part of the Kurdish problem. Despite its own past, it is now maintaining a policy of supporting a fascist regime. This policy must be exposed to the public." End quote. In June this year, even as Turkey's destructive military operations continued in Iraqi Kurdistan, proposals to impose arms embargoes on Turkey, submitted to the Bundestag by two of the main opposition parties in Germany, that's the Greens and the Left Party, were rejected. The Defend Kurdistan Initiative is an international delegation for peace, consisting of journalists, feminists, politicians, academics, ecologists, and members from anti-war groups from various European countries, including Germany. Some members of the delegation arrived in Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan in June to try and halt the conflict taking place there after the Turkish armed forces began their major cross-border military offensive on the 23rd of April. It is worth pointing out that several peace activists from the Defend Kurdistan Initiative, which Martin Dulzer is a member of, were controversially prevented from even leaving Germany to get to Erbil by the German authorities. Some delegates, indeed, from the Defend Kurdistan Initiative also had an extremely harsh time on their arrival back in Germany. ANF reported, for example, that at Frankfurt Airport, police officers harassed members of the delegation. 8 delegates were subjected to identification treatments, several people were pressed with their heads against the wall and detained without justification, it reported. 27 members of the delegation who went to Germany's Dusseldorf airport on the morning of the 12th of June were detained by the police and had their passports confiscated. The delegates were questioned by the police at the airport. German police, in fact, reportedly issued a statement that the visit by the peace delegation harms our relations with Turkey, which is a NATO partner. The Confederation of Kurdistan Communities in Germany, CONMED, protested against these actions and stated, and I quote here, "The German police said in a statement that the visit planned by the delegation harms our relations with Turkey, which is a NATO partner. this statement is actually a confession and confirmed that Germany is a partner in the genocidal war in Kurdistan. The German government, which has been financing the Turkish massacre policies in Kurdistan for years, has once again shown that it is on the side of the fascist Turkish state and its representative, dictator Erdogan. Just as the AKP-MHP fascism does not tolerate any alternative thought and democracy in Turkey, and attacks elected deputies, co-mayors and non-governmental organisations, the German government once again stands by the fascist Turkish regime by preventing the peace delegation, which includes elected deputies, from doing their work. End quote. Despite these obstacles, some members of the delegation reached Iraqi Kurdistan and concluded that, and again I quote, genocidal acts from Turkey are continuing right now, using military technology from Europe. End quote. Here are other criminalising and repressive actions that have recently taken place in Germany. The fourth annual meeting of the European Kurdish Democratic Society's Congress, the KCDKE, scheduled to be held on the 11th of July this year, was banned by the German authorities at the last minute. As reported by Medianews, it was stated that the reason for the ban was the claim that 200 senior officials of the PKK were planning to attend the Congress. However, KCDKE, which was formally established in Belgium and is recognised under European law, has the legal right to hold Congresses anywhere in Europe. And with the last-minute ban on the Congress, Germany, it stated, was attempting to criminalise hundreds of Kurdish institutions working legally in Europe. The KCDKE issued the following statement. In banning the Congress, is the German police taking instructions from the dictator Erdogan? We absolutely refuse to accept that our Congress, which even received a message of congratulations from the mayor of Cologne, can be banned in this way. We do not accept the criminalisation of the KCDKE. That 200 high-ranking PKK members were to be present at the Congress is a fabrication. We call on the German government to change this attitude, the KCDKE stated. It should be known that in defiance and resistance to this ban, the KCDKE held its Congress in an open area and thus frustrated the German ban. German lawyer Roland Meister, who applied to a Cologne court to challenge the ban, stated that, and I quote, the ban on the Congress of the biggest Kurdish institution in Europe violates the existing legal framework of the European Court of Human Rights and of the German Constitution. End quote. In another notable incident in July this year, upon his release after a trial that he claimed was prejudiced against him from the start, a Kurdish activist named Ozkan T, who had been in prison in Germany since 2018, shared details of violations of human rights that he stated had been perpetrated by German security forces and prison officers against him and others. The aim was to criminalise the PKK in the eyes of the European public, and accordingly they made up accusations referring to a terrorist organisation, he noted. As reported by Yeni Ozga Politica and Medianews, indicating that the arrest was like a show trial by the German government, Ozkan stated that many special teams were involved in the operation. Explaining how he was brought to the courtroom in a convoy of police cars, accompanied by special teams with automatic weapons, his hands cuffed behind his back, his ankles in leg irons, he said there were extreme security measures in the courtroom and on the premises too. He went on to explain that they were placed in cells under the court first, then taken to the courtroom where there was a glass wall between them and their lawyers, so they were even not able to communicate with their lawyers satisfactorily. He said that he was punched by some of the guards in the cell after the courtroom session before he was transferred back to prison. He was then physically dragged to the vehicle by the guards. He stated that none of their demands were accepted by the court during the court hearings, and almost all objections made by their lawyers were rejected, pointing out that the verdict against them seemed to have been decided before the trial had even begun. Ozkan T also said that they refused to be kept in glass cages during the first hearing. Eventually, they were released only after it became all too evident that there were multiple inconsistencies in the chief witness's statements that the authorities were using against them. And again, highlighting the chilling situation in Germany, which so many Kurds in the diaspora face there. A Kurdish activist was fined by a German court in July this year for the second time for carrying a poster with the image of Abdullah Öcalan. She had also been sentenced to pay €3,400 before a similar case in 2019. As Medinews has reported, the cases are linked to incidents including a demonstration against the Munich Security Conference on the 15th of February last year, the Freedom Rally for Öcalan on the 10th of March this year, and a protest against the Turkish cross-border military operation into Iraqi Kurdistan this year. The German Interior Ministry, it should be noted, banned the usage of the symbols of many Kurdish organisations, including the People's Protection Units, the YPG, and the Women's Protection Units, the YPJ, as well as photographs of Öcalan on the 2nd of March 2017. And at the beginning of this month, two political asylum seekers from Turkey were denied asylum by Bavarian courts, which are even more extreme than other courts in other parts of Germany. Regarding the German court's judgment, one of the asylum seekers said, "The court says the country ruled by Tayyip Erdogan is a democratic one. They say it is not their concern that there is a possibility of us being tortured in prison." Now, over to you, Martin, and once again, a really welcome to the podcast today. Could you obviously please comment on the German state's targeting of the Defend Kurdistan initiative, which you're a member of, the German state's wider policies with regard to Kurds and their criminalisation, particularly with regard to those who express support for movements opposed to the Turkish government and the state's oppressive politics, and also any issues relating to the German arms trade with Turkey. In Belgium, the PKK has been decriminalised, but what is the situation regarding political initiatives to decriminalise the PKK in Germany? And once again, thank you so much, Martin, for joining us.
Yes, hello, Desmond. What you have been describing is going very much into detail, and I want to do some comments and some deeper analysis in certain of these points you were bringing forward.
Thank you.
First, when I look at the German politics, I have to say that the federal German governments have been pursuing a geostrategically oriented policy towards Turkey for more than 100 years now. Instead of a policy oriented towards human rights and international law, what I would prefer, and many German citizens and people who live in Germany as well would prefer, it's really based on a kind of brotherhood in arms with Turkey, and this beginning with the Armenian genocide, or even before. The German government in that time was involved in the Armenian genocide, and the politic of Turkey was supported by German governments ever since that. Doesn't matter what happened, doesn't matter if there was a military coup in the 1980s or whether there was the attacks on the villages and deportation from villages and destruction of the villages in the Kurdish provinces of Turkey in the 1990s, up to today where the government of the fascistoid President Erdogan, who works together with the fascist MHP, MHP, National Party. There is it's a very, very sad brotherhood in arms and in security policies. And so what happens here in Germany, it doesn't happen in the interest of the population of German citizens. So, for example, when you look at the prosecution, you have been talking of the paragraph 129A, which was against a terrorist organization. And then in the end of the last millennium, the paragraph was changed in 129B, which is a paragraph against so-called terrorist organizations abroad. And it causes sentences between 3 and 6 years And there's more than, I think, meanwhile, it's 30 persons who had been prosecuted in between 3 and 6 years for organizing peace demonstrations or taking care of conflicts in the Kurdish community, because this paragraph allows these high prison sentences without the persons have been accused of any concrete crime. Just because the German government did the analysis, it's not an analysis, but the interpretation that the PKK is a terrorist organization in Turkey, everyone who is declared or labeled a member of this organization in Germany can be sentenced to this. Long prison sentences. And this is clearly contradicting the German constitution, as well as the politics of the German government is contradicting international law and it's contradicting the human rights declarations of the United Nations. I will get a bit more deep in that soon. And if we look at that, we can see clearly that the German governments are clearly not, they are kind of aware, but they don't want to be really taking into account the aggressivity of the Neo-Ottoman project of Erdogan. When we look at Azerbaijan attacking Armenia, when we look at the support of the Daesh, of the so-called Islamic State through Erdogan and his armed brotherhood in arms in Afrin, where war crimes are conducted by the Turkish army collaborating with Islamist terror groups, which are documented by the United Nations. The German government is aware of that. The German government, as well, is aware of that there has been more than 20, meanwhile, I think it's even nearly 30 reports of use of chemical weapons of the Turkish army in South Kurdistan, in North Iraq, against tunnel systems of the guerrilla and civil society in Northern Iraq. The German government knows that. And so, to my mind, is kind of a perversion to say that a delegation, for example, like our delegation who was aiming to bring forward a dialogue in between the Kurdish actors in northern Iraq and to document what is going on in that war, to interpret and to not allow people to travel to northern Iraq with the excuse, let's call it excuse, that that would risk to negatively impulse foreign relations with Turkey. When I see the will and the idea of the German population, which in evaluations regularly says we don't want any war, more than 70% of the German population always forward that in evaluations. When we see that the interest of the population everywhere, the majority of population everywhere, is the living together respectfully in between the ethnic groups, the religious group, that no one you talk with will tell, my interest is that any army uses chemical weapons, or whether any government tries to bring forward a genocide like the Turkish government does against the Kurd and the Kurds in the moment. No one would say, I would like that my neighbor or my fellow brother in northern Iraq or sister in northern Iraq shall be shot by any Turkish soldier who is ordered to an intervention in that country. No one wants that. Everyone wants that the people live peacefully. And so it cannot be the interest of Germany towards Turkey that people cannot lead a dialogue, because dialogue is the only way to peace. But that is a problem of the German government and the German authorities, to my mind, that they have decided, due to geostrategical aims, to still work together with a dictator like Erdogan, who is responsible for that more than 30,000 politicians, human rights activists, women activists are in Turkish jails where torture is a daily practice. A dictator like Erdogan, who works together with the MHP, which is a fascist party. A dictator like Erdogan, who works together with the Islamic State to conquer Afrin and other parts of Rojava, North Syria, and who now, against international law again, tries to conquer parts of northern Iraq, that the German government still prefers to work together with such a political actor, because Turkey is part of the NATO, and because the German government might be afraid of refugees who flee from the Syrian war and hope that the government of Erdogan, for a lot of money, keeps them outside of Germany. I think that is a kind of capitulation towards international law and towards the self-declared will of the German government to keep on to the human rights conventions of the United Nations, of the European Union, and worldwide international law and worldwide war law. Because as well, the government we brought forward together with some members of parliament, some artists, some scientists, two claims, criminal charges against Erdogan and other politicians. One in 2011 because of 10 war crimes against Kurdish guerrilla and Kurdish population, including extrajudicial killings and chemical warfare, and one in 2016 as well, a criminal charge against Recep Tayyip Erdogan and other politicians and generals for the war crimes they were conducting in Cizre, where Turkish soldiers were putting more than 100 people who were hiding from rockets in cellars. They were putting petrol in the cellars and burning the people alive. But the German federal prosecutors, general prosecutor, didn't bring that claim to court without any comprehensible justification, just because of political reasons. Because still, even though it's known how grave and how deeply the abuses of international law and war regulations, the Turkish army under the responsibility of Recep Tayyip Erdogan is conducting, the German government still prefers to work together with this government instead of seeing what would be a, let's say, development in respect of human rights and humanitarian ideas in that region. And if you look at the actors in that region, you can see clearly that the PKK, since now around about 20 years, is trying very, very offensively to bring forward peace processes. The ideology, the democratic confederalism developed by PKK and its leader Abdullah Öcalan, is bringing forward an ideology for Middle East, idea of a development of society for the Middle East, where the people, the different ethnic groups, the different populations, the different religious orientations live together in harmony and live together with basic human rights guaranteed, with minority rights guaranteed, with gender equality guaranteed, and live together in a democratic, basic democratic structure. That is what should be preferred by the European Union, at least, with their self-declared human rights ideas, and it should be preferred by every government. And but it is not. So there's a big, big contradiction in between the declared will on paper and the political practice. And as well, all what you described, the development since the 1980s until today in the criminalization of the Kurdish movement in Germany and the European Union, is based on geostrategical aims, and it's not based on a let's say strategy where every human being and every political actor is seen as equal. So it is based on a brotherhood in arms with Turkey, which is very, very, very sad for the population. So if you would, I would, when I say, let's dream, I would say, why can't Abdullah Öcalan be respected as a leader of a Kurdish population as Mandela in South Africa? Because he could play a similar role if the US government and the German government would like him to do so, or would allow, or would do pressure on Turkey to let him play that role. But it's not happening. I think there is three reasons. It's about oil in the Middle East, the control on oils and trade routes. It is that still it's preferred that the government of Erdogan or other reactionary powers are preferred as association partners more than a socialist anarchist movement like the Kurdish movement, which is really bringing forward democracy, but self-determinated development of the region as well. And so there is a big fear, the third reason, a big fear on the PKK, because in Germany, the left-wing is, since 1989, the structure was destroyed very brutally of the most left-wing organizations. Now they recovered a little bit, but none of the organization has, let's say, a lot of power to organize people. So the Kurdish movement is one of the only actors in Germany, because we have a large Kurdish community. There's like 3 million, roundabout 3.5 million Turkish and Kurdish people living in Germany. And of them is more than 1 million is Kurdish origin. So the German government is afraid of the organization power of the PKK and the Kurdish movement. And so are they afraid of Abdullah Öcalan. So even the flags are forbidden. The flags of Öcalan are forbidden. How can you fear a person who brought forward a peace process from 2013 to 2015 until Erdogan decided to stop the peace protest, because he was seeing he will never gain the control over Kurdish population, because the Kurdish population is has internalized the ideas of Abdullah Öcalan. So why is the German government still afraid of that man? When we see that the PKK saved several hundred thousand Yazidis' life in the 2016 when the Islamic State was trying, or was it 2015, when they were invading the Yazidi regions in northern Iraq. The PKK was the one who opened a tunnel, a corridor, and more than 200,000 Yazidis could flee from being massacred. More than enough were massacred. It was a try of a genocide again. But the PKK was saving hundreds of thousands of people's lives. And since that, there was some kind of discussion. Should we stop putting the PKK on the terror list and so on, but that was only a discussion under experts. For example, the Stiftung Wissenschaft und Politik, the Association for Science and Politics, which is the think tank to provide German foreign ministry with ideas, was they always try to discuss two or three different strategies, and one of their ideas was to legalize the PKK because they are quite close with their humanitarian ideas to what the European Union or the German government should bring forward. But that was just one idea, but the German government always preferred the other idea, to still work together with the government of Erdogan without any impact, doing pressure on the government of Erdogan to keep to the human rights and to keep to international law. And that's a problem. That's the main problem we have, that there is decision has been made. And I think it's very dangerous because the government of Erdogan has a neo-Ottoman idea. They were already invading Afrin and parts of Rojava, parts of the Turkish army invading in Libya. Other parts now try to invade northern Iraq. Other parts are together with the Azerbaijani army was invading in Berg Karabakh and parts of Armenia. And Erdogan is trying to claim some oil and gas fields in the Mediterranean Sea. So, and he's using the Islamic State to blackmail the European governments. If they don't follow his ideas, he will send them to Europe. I think that's a big problem when we look at history. In the 1930s, some of the governments still thought they can work with Adolf Hitler and there will be no enlargement and no world war. And now we can see that a government like the government Erdogan, who works together with Islamists, gets stronger and gets forward to its Ottoman idea. Now we have the Taliban who get into power in Afghanistan, and we don't really know, but we can estimate that in Iraq, some Islamist forces as well would like to take power. So I think even when we think in an immanent way of capitalist systems, it cannot be wanted that a aggressive actor like the government of Turkey gets more and more power and gets more and more influence and expands against international law. So what I would give as idea to the German government and authorities, they have to do a U-turn. They have to decriminalize the PKK. They have to bring forward on the European level that the PKK is taken from the European terror list. And they have to start dialogue with actors like Abdullah Öcalan. They have to bring forward that the all political prisoners, first Abdullah Öcalan, but all other political prisoners, 30,000 in Turkey, have to be released. And they should bring forward political pressure on Erdogan that any abuse of international law, any war crime is conducted, is judged as well. The United Nations have reports on Afrin. The United Nations know what's going on in northern Iraq, and they don't do anything. They really don't do anything about that. It's just on paper, but they have to do something to stop this dictator and to stop that government and to stop that army, which is working together with the Islamic State, of destroying a whole region and a lot of human lives. And I think for that, the PKK and the Kurdish movement could be a very good partner, because they are the ones who could bring stability to the Middle East. But the problem is, we live in a capitalist system. And mostly, if there is no other alternative to a capitalist system, like we are faced with a situation like that long time, that there is only like Cuba or Venezuela who have fought very hard, or Rojava, all that regions are fought very hard by other powers, because they try to establish systems where the human beings are in the center of life and the center of developments, and not geostrategical interests. So I think it's necessary not only to appeal on our governments or the European Union or the United Nations. This is very necessary and is what I'm doing since more than 20 years, together with many, many other activists and politicians, but it's necessary as well to change our societies, to bring forward, and more people see it in the corona crisis and see it through this more and more war, that it's necessary that something's going wrong. If the majority of people wants no war in Germany, 70%, and the German government is conducting 14 interventions, and then it's like another 13 interventions which are not called interventions, where German warships, battleships, and German troops are in foreign countries, but it's not called interventions, but they are indeed interventions. And the people see the contradiction in between their own will and the practice of the government. So I think there has to be some, resistance and organization of each other together with the humanist forces. Doesn't matter if they are in trade unions, doesn't matter if they are in the church, doesn't matter if they are in leftist parties, doesn't matter if it's just people who have a humanist idea, to bring forward a peaceful politics and to force the government or to change the government so that internationally there is no more idea of imperialist and colonialist or neo-colonialist interventions, like in the Middle East or like in parts of Africa, or now the new idea to attack China, which was brought forward by US President Biden. This all is what the majority of people don't want. I think we only have to find a way how the will of the majority of people is brought forward so that there can be developments, self-determined developments, and democratic developments worldwide. So I think what you was bringing forward, the criminalization of the Kurdish in Germany, is one part of a holistic way of politics, but of a set way of politics, which is based on profit interests over people, and which is based on geostrategical interest over people. So we all should be part of a U-turn where the center of politics is the human being who can live, every human being, that every human being can live in dignity, can live due to international law and human rights, and where everyone can participate democratically. So I think it's a huge topic, because actors like Abdullah Öcalan, or as well the active revolutionaries in Cuba or wherever, who bring forward an idea of equality, always provoke a lot of repression, but they provoke in a positive way as well, that people keep on thinking of what is necessary to make the world a better place. So, yes.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, what you were saying, I think, is a very powerful issue, that a lot of politics today amongst the big powers is really based upon disaster capitalism. And, you know, as you say, the example of Rojava and Ocalan's writings and philosophical teachings point towards a democratic confederalism, which challenge all of this. And, you know, in the same way that you mentioned some of the other countries in South America, etc., you know, to a great degree, you know, Germany being one of the capitals of, you know, this global disaster capitalism linked economy, doesn't Ocalan, Rojava, and, you know, what the Kurds in terms of that movement represent, even in Turkey and elsewhere, precisely the threat of a good example. You know, many people talk about Chile and other places being targeted because of that threat of a good example, looking at an alternative framework where people don't have to be in conflict. And I mean, to a great degree, aren't, and I know Ocalan has discussed this, aren't the current drivers of the current capitalist system profiting off war, from arms, from disasters, you know, the shock doctrine, targeting areas really to, as you said, consume rather than actually move the other way. Now, in Germany itself, you mentioned that there are all these alternative movements, and people who are obviously aware of these issues would have seen the alternative visions which have been provided. Do you think there is enough of a political structure where there is widespread support from some of these sections to support the Kurds being targeted in Germany, and obviously in the bigger sense, you know, internationally through the way in which the German government engages, obviously with Turkey rather than against Turkey?
Yes, there is some kind of structures, especially many young people who are looking for a perspective are attracted by the ideas of the Kurdish movement and of Abdullah Öcalan. They are interested in it. Some are organizing as well. That's what the German authorities don't like at all, if the Kurdish movement and parts of the left-wing organize together. So I think that's one of the reasons as well why our delegation was prevented to travel from Düsseldorf to Erbil, because there was some politicians, for example, like Cansu Özdemir and me, as a Cansu Özdemir is a part of the Hamburg parliament, me, I'm a scientific assistant of a German federal parliamentarian, André Honko. And there was some other human rights activists who were interested in going there and leading the dialogue for peace, because they see the beauty as well of the Kurdish movement with the ideas of equality. And I think the German government, or parts of the German government or authorities, think that is dangerous if the people see that there could be a different perspective. So they try to criminalize that link in between the different movements or internationalism. So that was one reason they tried to prevent people to go there, because they want to put them into consciousness. If there is hope, the hope shall be destroyed. And that is one thing what I see. We had a good demonstration on the weekend with like 5,000 Kurdish and German people coming together for demonstrating against the war against Northern Iraq. And it was a very good demonstration. But in the beginning, it was announced by André Honko, the parliamentarian I work for, and me. And so in the beginning, the police searched the loudspeaker system wagon, which is against the law. There was no reason to search it. In the end, they found six posters of Abdullah Öcalan, which they were seizing, where we were saying, what are you doing? You cannot just get into a wagon, because if there is no reason for that, if there's no juridical foundation for that. But they did it. They just want to show the Kurdish movement and those who are in solidarity with the Kurdish movement, your kind of organization is not wanted. So, but we had to negotiate hard, and we could walk through the city of Düsseldorf, and we make a manifestation on the so-called Rheinwiesen near the River of Rhine, where there was bands playing and where a lot of politicians and artists were contributing for peace and against the intervention in northern Iraq. But the organization, when I look at what's happening in northern Iraq, I mean, there's more than 20 reports on chemical weapons used by the Turkish army. If that would happen in Syria or it happened in Belarus, we have a war against Belarus, or we have a ban on the Assad regime, so forth. If the Turkish army uses 20 times chemical weapons and there is eyewitnesses, nothing happens. This is like a kind of hypocrisy, and this is a kind of two-sidedness. It's something like, no, there should be so far evaluation by the OPCW, which is the Organization for Prevention of the Use of Chemical Weapons. There should be actions by the UN, by the NATO members, by every government which has a consciousness, should be an intervention against Turkey to stop this.
Exactly, so but there's nothing so far, I take it.
It doesn't happen. So something's going wrong. And when we look at that, there shouldn't be like 5,000 Kurdish and Solidarity people in Düsseldorf for a demonstration, but 500,000.
Yes, exactly.
You see, why? Because you asked for organization. There is organization against war. We, for example, do a popular initiative in Hamburg. There's a possibility to do a popular initiative in three steps, and we do it against the weapon transports through Hamburg port. And now in the first step, you have 6 months to collect 10,000 signatures, and we have 4 months in times of Corona, and we already have more than 10,000 signatures. So we will manage the first, the second, and the third step. In the third step, you need a majority of 30% of those who can vote, and you have to have this decision together with an election. So maybe we can force, by a popular initiative, the Hamburg government no more to transport weapons through the port. So, but it's a long procedure. We now have the trade unions on our side. We have the parts of the church on our side. We have a left movement on our side, the socialists, the communist parties, parts of NGOs are with us as well. So we organize peace. There was ICAN, if you know that initiative against the for the treaty against atom nuclear weapons, which is worldwide, they had some success as well. But in comparison to the destructive warfare which is done in the moment, the organization is not strong enough and not big enough, because many people, the organization, let's say in the industrial, Western industrial capitalist system, the left-wing organization has been destroyed after 1989, and it never recovered really. And the impact of the determinative I don't know the English word for that. I have to describe it in another way. In the moment, the formations of society in Western Europe are mostly depoliticized.
Yeah.
The neoliberal formation, yes. many people are depoliticized, and they are searching somehow for something. But most of the people focus on one topic, like climate change, do some symbolic action, but the knowledge of how to organize really in a political way with an impact on society, not just a small impulse, which is then strangulated by the bourgeoisie, but yes. With real impact. The knowledge about this is far too less. So I think, short answer after long talking to your question, no, there's not enough organization in Germany against the criminalization of the Kurdish movement. And there's not enough organization for peace until now, but we are doing our best.
Yes.
To bring
As you
it
say, it's an ongoing struggle to try and break through all these barriers, whether it's the media, the wider political structures. You mentioned the depoliticization of actions as well, which are key distractions, you know, as I'm sure you've identified there. But thank you very much for highlighting these issues and for highlighting these forms of solidarity, which are, you know, actively trying to practically address as much as possible ways in which one can change and transform society from the local to the global, as you've mentioned there. Could you give us any further information about the Defend Kurdistan initiative? Is it an ongoing initiative now? Because it sounds that it's absolutely crucial to keep highlighting these types of issues, not just internationally, but obviously the connections between the core capitalist countries, the dirty politics taking place, and what's happening in the other areas. I mean, has the Defend Kurdistan initiative managed to at least reach out to many more people in Germany itself, you know, through its media and through its actions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Defend Kurdistan initiative is an initiative of politicians, academics, activists, scientists, artists, musicians, everyone who wants to take place, who has the idea of humanist development in Kurdistan and a democratic development in Kurdistan, and who is in solidarity with the Kurdish movement. And of course, we will continue our struggle, because the war is going on and we want to stop this war in northern Iraq. We want to stop the war against Rojava. And we think, if you look at this Defend Kurdistan, it's funny. The authorities, when we were claiming for the demonstration, they were so interested. Who's Defend Kurdistan? Is it CONMED? Is it all the Kurdish structures? And then we said, okay, it's not our role to tell you who's that. Look in the internet. So they had to look in the internet and they could see what I told. It's a beautiful initiative because it shows that many people are not thinking in a nationalist way, but they're thinking in a way how a human system and humanity can be brought forward. And if I look at the Kurdish movement, how it was developing in the Kurdish provinces of Turkey in between 2002 and 2011, where I could visit Turkey after was no more possible because I was declared an enemy of the state. But there was, in especially 2006 to 2011, there was built up very beautiful structures. When we speak of socialism, or when we speak of a formation of society, where what is the difference in between capitalist system and a socialist system, or a basic democratic system, is that in a socialist system every human being tries to bring every other human being to its own capacities and to its own centers. And when I looked at that society in, for example, in Diyarbakir, Ahmet Sur, the old city of Diyarbakir, there was, for example, the Dicle Firat Kulturmerkezi. It was a cultural center where people could learn theater, could learn music, could dance, could just gather and drink tea and discuss. And on the other hand, there was the pre-parties of the HDP, was it BDP or DEHAB or whatever, during the times. And there was other parts in society. And you could see that most of the people found a place where they could develop their abilities. And I've never seen in my life another society where the people were coming so close to develop them with themselves in a society structure. And I think this is something which is very rich and beautiful. And the government of Erdogan did everything to in jail all those people who organized this process, and after even to destroy the whole city of Sur and other cities where the people conducted this process. And we have the same in Rojava, the people trying to
yes.
bring forward a society like this. And this is a very, very beautiful attempt, which of course attracts people, which of course, because it's beautiful, if you meet people who reflect yourself and who tell you, look, I see you there, you have good abilities there, maybe I think there you could develop a little bit, and you vice versa can do so as well, without, like in capitalist system, if you criticize someone, mostly they say, think it's an abuse against your personality. But it's bullshit. It's good to, if I respect you, I would say, I see what you're doing, this and this, I think it's very fine. This and this, I think, oh, I think you stand beside yourself in this and that point, and we lead each other to who we are. This is something which happened in the Kurdish movement. And I think the people who organize Defend Kurdistan are people who see that we worldwide have this responsibility, and we have to work together to defend all the areas of the world and all those actors who want to bring forward humanity in that way. And I think that is why Defend Kurdistan will be going on as well and will be proceeding, because in the end, many young people, especially when I look in my generation, is now already I'm quite old, when I see in that generation now who the people who are 14, 15, 17, 20, 23, 24, many, many, many see that they cannot unfold in the society formation we are living in. And they are searching for something, something else. And so I think Defend Kurdistan is one small part and a very important part
yes.
of bringing forward ideas of consciousness.
Well,
and it will go on. And we have, of course, we have action. We will have some more actions, some
yes.
demonstrations. We will try to do conferences, and we will maybe, I don't know if there will be, for sure there can be another delegation in the region if it's possible to reach there. There can be a lot, and the people all will, not individually, but together will struggle to defend Kurdistan and to defend the human rights worldwide.
And as you said, the wider vision of just a better world. Well, really, I can't thank you enough. I'm sure our readers and listeners will really have found this the most interesting talk by you. Thank you so much once again, Martin. And hopefully, you know, we can have you on a podcast in the next few weeks just to elaborate again on a lot of these issues, concerns and ideas. Thank you so much.
Thank you as well. Sorry for my sometimes a bit poor English.
No, it was perfect.
Better,
it was perfect.